start with the very first Rashi in the Sedra. Rashi comments on the Pasuk Vo'era El Avraham El Yitzchak Ve'El Yaakov Bekel Shakai. Rashi says Vo'era El Ha'avos. Very difficult Rashi. What is Rashi adding here? The Pasuk says Vo'era El Avraham El Yitzchak Ve'El Yaakov. I know that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are the Avos. Why do I need Rashi to add those words, Vo'era El Ha'avos? In addition, Rashi explains over there what the complaint against Moshe Rabbeinu is, that many times HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that I promised the Avos various things and they didn't see the fulfillment of them. And they never questioned me. And you, Moshe Rabbeinu, the first time that I tell you something and you don't see immediately the fulfillment, you come to me with complaints. Lama hariyosu, lama zeh, lama zeh shlachtoni. Why'd you send me? Why'd you do bad to these people? Chaval al da'avdin v'lo mishtachin. It's a shame that they're lost and can't be found. So Rashi. Two problems with that. First of all, there's a famous Hasidish vort. They once asked Rebbe Reb Zusha. He once said that he's not afraid that if after 120 years he goes before the Beis and Shalmala and they ask him how come he wasn't like the Baal Shem Tov or he wasn't like the Rambam. He'll say, I didn't have the potential of the Baal Shem Tov of the Rambam. What do you want from me? But he's afraid they're going to ask him, how come you weren't like the Zusha? That's going to be the thing that he's afraid of. How come he didn't live up to his potential? What you see from that maisa is that you can't expect someone to live up to the expectations of someone else. Everybody has their potential, and you can only demand from a person what they can produce. You can't compare them to other people. And even though there seems to be a Gemara that says not like that, the Gemara says that Hillel Mechayves Aniyim. Whenever an Ani will come to Beis and Shalmala and use his poverty as an excuse why he didn't learn Torah or why he didn't keep mitzvahs, so the Rabban Shalom will tell him, look at Hillel. Hillel was a poor person and he learned Torah. And similarly it says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah will be Mechayev, I think it was Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, was what's it called, will be Mechayev, the Rabbi Eliezer will be Mechayev the Ashirim. He was a very rich person, he also learned Torah. So a person who comes and says, I was too rich and I was too involved with all of my holdings or whatever, not going to have an excuse. It seems from there that you can demand from somebody what somebody else produces. How come you weren't like Hillel? How come you weren't like this one? But over there, the Gemara means something else. The Gemara means to say the following. Somebody's going to come and say that poverty is the reason why I didn't learn Torah. So they're going to tell him that can't be the reason because there were people who were poor who did learn Torah. So it must be some other excuse that you have why you're not like Hillel, but not poverty. Poverty in itself is not an excuse because there were people who were poor who, despite that, learned Torah. So tell me something else. Tell me that you're not like Hillel, that you were poor, but X, Y, and Z. But don't tell me poverty, because poverty is not a good excuse in itself. So that doesn't mean that everybody has to be like Hillel. It just means that Hillel demonstrated that poverty in itself is not an excuse. But the idea is a true idea that the story brings out, that you can't demand from people how come they're not like someone else. Everybody is different. Everybody has different potential. So how could the Rabbanu Shel Olam demand from Moshe Rabbeinu, how come you weren't like the Avos? I'm not Avraham. I'm not Yitzchak. I'm not Yaakov. Why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu answer very simply? What do you want from me? I'm not them. And thirdly, it says, Chaval al da'avdin v'lo mishtachin. It's a shame they're lost and can't be found. First of all, if they're lost, they obviously can't be found, because they could be fine, they wouldn't be lost. So why the redundancy? And secondly, the Avos are lost. I know where they are. Their bodies are buried in Maris HaMachpelah, and their neshamas are in Shemayim. Where are they lost? What does it mean? Chaval al da'avdin v'lo mishtachin. Shame that they're lost and can't be found. To answer that, I want to explain. That's why Rashi added those words, v'eira el ha'avos. Avos are not merely fathers, nor are imahos, the imahos, merely mothers. The Gemara says, ein korin la'avos al ha'shlosha, and imahos, only those four. Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. And avos is only Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. And even though we had many, many fathers throughout the generations, but they are the avos. Avos means the foundations. Just like avos malacha on Shabbos, the toldos emanate from the avos. Avos of nezikin, the toldos emanate from the avos. Avos of tumma lahavdil, the toldos of come from the avos. We have within us the avos created the gene pool, the DNA of Klal Yisrael. And in that respect, everything that emanates, all of Klal Yisrael, come from those avos. So we have within us the power of the avos. You may not have the power of the Rambam or this one or that one. Those are unique things. But there are certain qualities that the avos created in Klal Yisrael that exist for all generations. That's why the Medrash says, Chayiv Adam Lomar Mosa Yagiu Maisai Lamaisai Avose Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. When will my deeds reach the deeds of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov? Do we think we're going to be exactly like Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov? No. But we have within us the potential they created. Reb Chaim Volozhiner says, the Asorah Nisyonos of Avraham Avinu created a reservoir of power for all future generations. And had Avraham Avinu not been able to leave Chutz La'aretz and come to Eretz Yisrael, no Jew in history would have been able to do the same. We get our power, the person who is able to make Aliyah and come to Eretz Yisrael after being born in Chutz La'aretz, right, he gets that power from Avraham Avinu. It's within him. Avraham Avinu created that reservoir of power that a person can tap into. Similarly, if Avraham Avinu had not been ready to sacrifice his son, no one would have been able to be Moser Nefesh al Kiddush Hashem for themselves, their families, in history. The power we have is the power that is part of our makeup, part of our DNA that came from the Avos and Imahos. It's part of us. So that's what it means, Vo'eira el Ha'avos. Rashi says, if the avos, if these Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov just would have been individuals, great individuals, then my question would be a good question. How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu have tainus on Moshe Rabbeinu? How come you weren't like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? I'm not them. They were greater people than me. I'm not them. What do you want from me? But Vo'era el ha'avos, I appear to them not as individuals, but as the avos. And therefore, what they created exists in the spiritual genetics, the gene pool, the DNA of Klal Yisrael. There you can have a taina. I appear to them part of what the avos accomplished and put into all generations is the fact that you can have total trust in the Rabbonu Shel Olam and not question him. And Chaval al da'avdin, it's a shame that it's lost in you. Somewhere within you, you have that power because it's in your spiritual genetic makeup. It's avdin, it's lost in you and I can't find it in you. That's what it means. They're not lost. But that power that they created, which should be in every Jew, Moshe Rabbeinu, especially should be in you. And in you, I don't find it. It's lost within you and I can't find it, but it's there somewhere and you have to work on it and bring it out. So that was why Rashi had to add the word El Ha'avos, even though Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are obviously the Avos. Rashi's pointing out that the Tain on Moshe Rabbeinu was not because these great people were able to do things that he can't do, but these people were the Avos. And in that respect, I can have a Tain on you, why you don't have within you the power of these Avos, why you're not bringing it out. And it's a shame that within you it's lost and can't be found. Okay. Next, the Arba Lashonos of Geula. So we normally understand them to be Vahotseisi, Vahitzalti, Vigoalti, Vilokachti. Vahotseisi means I will take you out of the labor in Mitzrayim. That was the first stage of Geula. And Vahitzalti Eschem Me'avodasam, you will no longer be slaves to them. That was done by Kriyas Yamsuf when the masters themselves died. And the Lakach Yashem Lila Am was Matan Torah, and that was also a stage in Geula, because Ein Lecha Ben Chorin Ela Mishosek BaTorah, so Pesach was not complete until Shavuos, when they got the Torah. And Vigoalti Yashem, the first is what's about Hotzesi Yashem Mitacha Sivlos Mitzrayim. They first started not to be working hard, then they stopped being slaves, then Vigoalti Yashem, and that happened at Kriyas Yamsuf. They were Geulim, Shira Chadosha, Shibchu Geulim, and then V'lokachti Eschem Lila'am. And that completed Yitzias Mitzrayim, and then V'hevesi Eschem El'aretz was bringing them into Eretz Yisrael. There's another Lashon, though, V'datem Ki Ani Hashem. What happened to that? Why isn't that counted? The Vilna Gaon says that really nothing is counted after Vigo'alti Eschem, because that finishes Geula. Every word after Vigo'alti, which is V'lokachti, V'hevesi, V'datem, is all post-Geula. Those aren't Lashonos of Geula, they're past Geula. But there's only three before that. V'hotseisi, V'itzalti, V'go'alti. Says the Vilna Gaon, the Vigo'alti has two aspects to it. Vigo'alti Eschem Bizroa Netuyo uvishvatim Gidolim. Two different things. So the Vigo'alti counts twice. Vigo'alti Eschem Bizroa Netuyo uvishvatim Gidolim. As if it said it twice. Vigo'alti Eschem Bizroa Netuyo, Vigo'alti Eschem Bishvatim Gidolim. One is that the Rabbanu Shom will affect the Geula on the Jewish people themselves, and the other one that he will affect it on the negatively on the Mitzrim. He'll punish the Mitzrim, and he will see to it that we become Geulim. So in any case, so that's the four Lashonos. That answers why everything after that is not counted. Not V'hevesi, not V'datem, and not V'lokachti Eschem Lila'am. But we have everything except V'hevesi, and the V'hevesi isn't counted because it never really was completed completely. We never got Eretz Yisrael eternally. That we were there eternally. We went to Golus twice. So the Vehevesi, there's Arba Lashonos of Geula, there's the Arba Kosos, connected them. And the Vehevesi, which is the fifth Kos, we leave for Eliyahu. That Kos, that Lashon of Geula will be completed when Eliyahu comes and Mashiach comes. That's the symbolism of the Seder. But there's still one extra Lashon that isn't accounted for. V'datem ki ani Hashem, says the Sfarno. V'datem is not a separate phase of Geula, but it is something that had to go along with every other phase. V'datem means think. Think deeply, hisbonenu, into what I'm doing. That each phase, I'll fulfill the Hotzesi Eschem, Mitachas Sivlos Mitzrayim, you'll stop working hard in Mitzrayim. Contemplate and think. What does that mean? Here you were slaves working hard, Avodas Perech, and all of a sudden you're free from that. What does that teach you about the Rabbanu Shel Olam, about your purpose in life? What does each of these phases teach you as to the Rabbanu Shel Olam's relationship with you? And then the Hitzalti Eschem Mi'avodosam, the next stage. And then V'go'alti Eschem. Each stage needed his bonenus, to think. Because if you don't think into it, then it's not going to have the proper effect. A person can witness and experience tremendous things. But if you don't think into it, you don't contemplate it, you don't internalize it, then it's lost. And it says right after that, V'lo shamu amosha mikotza ruach me'avodah kasha. They didn't have the time to really think into it. They experience all these things, but without thinking into it, without contemplating it, without pondering it, and therefore it didn't have the effect it was supposed to. And had it had the effect it was supposed to, then they would have gone into Eretz Yisrael, built the Beis HaMikdash, and everything would have been eternal. But because they didn't think, and they let these things pass over them, excuse the pun, that they let them, right, they let them, didn't internalize it. They just experienced it without thinking into it. It didn't make the impression it should have, and therefore they never went into Eretz Yisrael in a way that it would be eternal. There always was a chance of galus and churban and so on. And part of the Indian of galus is that we should contemplate and think. It makes you think. Doesn't give you a chance not to think. And in fact, all of chatoyim and all of the churban is based on the fact that people don't think. Where is that in the pasuk in Yeshayahu? Right away in the beginning. Yoda Ashor Konehu Vachamor Evus Ba'alav. Ashor knows who its owner is. A Chamor knows at least who feeds it. Ami Yisrael O Yoda. Klal Yisrael didn't even know these simple things that are instinctive to an animal. Animals know. Why didn't they know? Ki Ami Lo Hisbonan. Because they didn't think. A human being can only internalize and come to conclusions if he thinks. An animal can function on instinct. It knows it instinctively. Human beings, even the things that are instinctive to animals, don't make an impression on a human being unless you think. Ami lo hisbonan. So all of the great miracles of Mitzrayim, of Yetzias Mitzrayim, didn't really have the effect they should have because the people didn't think into them. They didn't have time, they didn't have the patience to really contemplate and think deeply into what was going on. And therefore, if you don't think deeply into things, you can miss the most important lessons, the things that can have the greatest effect on you. If you don't think into them, they don't have an effect on you. It says that the Chafetz Chaim explains Parshas Balak, which speaks about Bilam and his nevuahs. There's something very unique about Parshas Balak. It doesn't have any parshios. There are no paragraphs. Usually in the Torah, we call it a Parshas HaShavua, but it's really Parshios HaShavua. It's a Sedra. A Sedra is composed of many Parshios, many paragraphs. There's Samach and Pei, there's a Parshas Stuma and a Parshas Psucha, and the Gemara says that those signify the place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught Moshe Rabbeinu the Shir, and finished at the end of a paragraph and gave him time to think about it, to review it, to think about it. That's what the Parshios in the Torah signify. The place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu stopped the Shir and told Moshe Rabbeinu, think, ponder, review, then we'll go on. It's interesting that Parshas Balak or Sedras Balak has no Parshios. It's all one run-on thing. There are no paragraphs. Says the Chafetz Chaim to signify the fact, what made the difference between Bilam and Moshe Rabbeinu? They both had seemingly the same potential. Yet Moshe Rabbeinu used that potential to become Moshe Rabbeinu, and Bilam remained a Bilam Arasha. So the difference is Moshe Rabbeinu thought. With the Rabbanu Shel Olam told him things, he had prophecies, he pondered them, he contemplated them, he thought into them, and he became a Moshe Rabbeinu. And Bilam had the same potential, but the things that the Rabbanu Shel Olam revealed to him, he never thought about. He never internalized. He never contemplated. And therefore, he remained a Bilam Arasha. And we find that Bilam experienced tremendous miracles, and they just passed him by. Imagine if you would be walking your dog, and you're keeping up a fast pace, and the dog turned around and said, could you slow up a little bit? It's a little fast for me. What do you think you would do? Faint? Scream? Look for an agent to, get you money from hiring out this talking dog? Right, one of those things. But I tell you what you wouldn't do. You wouldn't just answer the dog as if it was something that happens every day, and you're conversing with your dog. But that's exactly what Bilam did. Once in history, never before, never after, did a donkey speak. And the donkey says to Bilam, did I deserve this? Right? Why'd you hit me? Right? I'm your faithful donkey. And Bilam doesn't faint, doesn't scream, right? Doesn't make a big deal. He answers the donkey as if it's his friend talking. No big deal. But if you're not prepared for something, and you don't think into it, right? And Bilam was a person who didn't think. Then unusual, miraculous things just pass you right by. So I have a proof to this Chafetz Chaim that was the problem of Bilam, that he didn't think. And because he didn't think, he remained a Bilam in this week's Sedra, later on. It says that by Makas Barad, so Moshe Rabbeinu warned Paro, there's going to be terrible hail, fire, and I give you a good advice. Anyone who will bring their cattle into the house, okay, the cattle will not be destroyed. The hail will only affect the cattle and the slaves out in the field. But if you bring them in the house, the plague will not enter the house. The plague is only for the outdoors. So the pasuk says like this, Hayorei Estavar Hashem Me'avdei Paro. The people of Paro's servants who feared God and heard this warning brought their cattle and their slaves into the house. They knew that God has a good track record. Every time he says something's going to happen, it's going to happen. So they didn't want to lose their cattle and their slaves. They brought them into the house. Ba'asher lo sam libo. And the one who didn't put his heart to it, didn't take notice, left his cattle and slaves in the field, and they were decimated. The Medrash comments on that the following. Hayorei Estavar Hashem Me'avdei Paro Ze'iov. We know that according to one opinion in Chazal, Iov was an advisor to Paro. He lived in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. And he was an advisor to Paro. And he was a Yorei Devar Hashem. Iov was a God-fearing person. So he was the one who the Torah is referring to, one of those, but the exemplary person who brought his cattle and slaves into the house. That was Iov. Va'asher lo sam libo ze Bilam. Bilam was also an advisor to Paro. And he left his cattle and his slaves out in the field. Now it doesn't say, Va'asher lo yorei dvar Hashem. The one who feared God brought his cattle inside. And the one who didn't fear God left them outside. It doesn't say that. It says, Asher lo sam libo. Bilam also feared God, but he never thought. Lo sam libo. He didn't pay attention. That was his problem. Because lo sam libo, he didn't pay attention, therefore, he didn't bother thinking, it didn't make an impression on him, and he didn't think to bring his slaves and his cattle into the house. That was Bilam's shortcoming. He didn't think. So the Torah says, Vidatem ki ani Hashem. It's not enough that these miracles are going to happen. You're going to have to think into it. And if you do, then the result will be you'll go into Eretz Yisrael eternally. But if you didn't think, Lo Shamuel Moshe, Mikotzer Ruach, Me'avoda Kosha, they didn't have the capability, the want to think, to internalize these things, then the Vehevesi was never really fulfilled. That's basically based on the Svarno. Okay. Later on, the Sedra, the Rabbanu Shem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Ki yadaber aleichem paro leimor, tenu lachem mofes, when Paro will speak to you saying, give yourselves a miracle, right, a sign, a mofes. So you should throw your stick on the ground and it'll turn into a snake. Then it says, Moshe and Aaron went to Paro and they did what Hashem said and they threw their stick down and became a snake. But God didn't say that. God said, when Paro will speak to you and he'll ask you for a miracle, then throw your stick down. But it doesn't seem from the pasuk that that's what happened. They went into Paro and immediately they threw sticks down and became snakes. It doesn't say that Paro asked them anything. So many Mefarshim say that's what it means. They went to Paro and did what God said, meaning Paro asked them and they threw the stick down. It's understood that that's what happened. But it doesn't say that. Secondly, it should say, Tenu Limo face. give me a miracle. I want you to prove to me, not tnu lachem, give yourselves a mofes. So I was thinking that maybe it means something else. It means the following. A person is influenced very much by the people that he sees and speaks to. And if you come face to face, that's why it says you're not even allowed to look and gaze at the face of a Rasha. Because just recognizing that there could be somebody who denies everything, who doesn't believe in anything, right, who defies the Rabbono Shel Olam, puts doubts in your mind. Because here's somebody who's an intelligent person, and he doesn't believe in any of this, and he defies it, so who knows, maybe he's right. Right? You may not believe what he believes, but it surely has to upset your surety in what you believe, because when you come face to face with somebody who denies everything, it has to put doubts in your mind. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe and Aaron the following, Ki yedaber aleichem Paro. When Paro will speak to you, and you'll have to look him in the face, right? And you're going to see a person who denies everything, and he's going to speak to you defiantly, then tenu lachem mofes, you're going to need a miracle to strengthen your emunah. Not for his sake, for your sake. Just speaking and coming in contact with a Paro shakes up and puts doubts in your mind. And therefore, the Rabban Shem said, you're going to need to see again that mofes I showed you. He showed Moshe Rabbeinu when he threw the stick down and turned to a snake. You're going to have to see that again to strengthen your emunah. So when Paro speak to you, Lemor, that will say to you, strengthen your emunah, throw it down for your sake, not for his sake. And that's what they did. They went in, they saw, looked Paro straight in the eye. He started to say his kfira, and they needed to strengthen their emunah. They threw down their sticks and became snakes for their sake to give them a little chizuk. Okay, the whole idea of the ani akshes leiv paro, the Rabbanu Shel Olam hardened Paro's heart. So the obvious question is, if the Rabbanu Shel Olam hardened Paro's heart, why did he punish him afterwards? Paro didn't have any bechira. So why was he punished? So there are a few different ways of explaining this phenomenon amongst the Rishonim. The Rambam says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not harden Paro's heart until after the first five Makkos. The first five Makkos, Paro hardened his own heart. And at that point, he was liable already for a death penalty. He defied the Rabbanu Shel Olam, he killed Jewish children, and the Rabbanu Shel Olam punished him. But the beginning of the punishment was that he took away the ability for him to do tshuva. In other words, and that seems difficult, the Barbanel finds that difficult. Why would the Rav Anshim take away the ability for somebody to do tshuva? HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants people to do tshuva. But that's not really the case all over, right? Because sometimes a person can have a punishment that his punishment is he's going to die. So if he dies, he's not going to be able to do tshuva anymore. So forget about the Rav Anshim taking away the ability to do tshuva. He's obviously taking it away by killing him. But he deserves to be killed. So at some point, Paro deserved to be killed, not to live anymore. Except the Rabban Shem wanted to use him as a pawn to bring out all these miracles. So he didn't kill him, but he took away his Bechira. And he used him as a pawn. But the fact that he took away his ability to do tshuva is not something that is so unusual or hard to understand, because he was already guilty to a point where he deserved to die. If he deserved to die, then he couldn't do tshuva anymore if he was dead. So instead of killing him, the Rabban Shem permitted him to live, took away his power of tshuva, and part of his punishment was to be used as a pawn to teach other people a lesson. So that's one way. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by hardening Paro's heart, took away his ability to do tshuva. He wasn't punished for what he did after that point, because that wasn't his bechira. But he was being punished for what he did up to that point. And part of the punishment was to take away his bechira and use him as a pawn. That's the Rambam. Other Rishonim learn differently. And they say just the opposite. it wasn't that the Rabban Hashem took away Paro's Bechira, just the opposite. A normal person witnessing the Eser Makos and all the miracles and punishments that the Egyptians got, including Paro, would have been forced to agree to what the Rabban Hashem wanted. And that the Rabban Hashem didn't want. He didn't want to force Paro to agree. He wanted to give him the free choice to agree. So in order to balance out the strength of the Makos pushing Paro to agree, the Rabban Hashem hardened Paro's heart to even the playing field. Now he was able to withstand the force of the Makos, and now he had free choice. Because his heart was hardened, now that enabled him to have free choice to say no. Because without hardening his heart, he wouldn't have had free choice, he would have had to say yes. And the Rabban Hashem wanted him to say yes because he chose to, not because he was forced. So he wanted to do all these miracles, but not force Paro to say yes, to give him the Bechira. And in order to do that, he had to harden his heart to compensate and balance out the Makos. So not only wasn't the hardening of Paro's heart taking away his Bechira, it was enabling him to have Bechira. And a third way in the Rishonim of understanding what it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hardened Paro's heart, it doesn't mean that he did anything specifically to make Paro either lose his Bechira or have Bechira. It meant that the Rabban Hashem brought these Makos in a way that there was a Makom Litos. There was always a place for Paro to say it wasn't God. It didn't prove anything. He had a way out. There was always a way to interpret it differently. That was called hardening his heart. Hardening his heart means not forcing him to do what was right, giving him a possible, doing it in such a way. The Abar Benel goes through this and shows how the Rabban Hashem brought the Makos in a way that Paro always had a way of interpreting it differently. There was always free choice. And in fact, anything is a mitzvah to do, it's impossible to prove. There always has to be a way out. Otherwise, there can't be Bechira. Right? If you could prove empirically that there's a God, then there couldn't be a mitzvah to believe in God. Because if you could prove it, and there's no way of looking at it differently, then you won't have free choice. It can be proved, like 1 + 1 = 2. But if there's always a way out, there's a way that you could refute those proofs, then a person has free choice to refute the proofs. Anything. There's a Gemara that says, a Mishnah, where Rashi learns, there's a mitzvah to believe, not only in Tchias HaMesim, but there's a mitzvah to believe that Tchias HaMesim is in the Torah. It's not just a Torah Shebaal Peh, there's a source in the written Torah for Tchias HaMesim. And there's two mitzvahs, a mitzvah to believe in Tchias HaMesim, and there's a mitzvah to believe that its source is in the Torah. The Gemara brings that source. Where is the source? One of them is, Leman yirbu yameichem v'imei v'neichem al ho'adoma asher nishba Hashem la'avoseichem l'seis lohem. When the God never gave it to them, they never got Eretz Yisrael, avoseichem. It was given to later generations. Must be that they're going to come alive again and God's going to give it to them. So there's Tchias HaMesim in our Torah. The Gemara then says another interpretation of that pasuk that doesn't imply Tchias HaMesim. A different pshat, l'asei slohem. So the question is, why did the Gemara have to say another pshat? Say this pshat, this is Tchias HaMesim. Because if there wouldn't be another way of learning that pasuk, there couldn't be Bechira of believing that Tchias HaMesim is in the Torah. You may not believe in Tchias HaMesim, but you can't deny that it's in the Torah. Right? It couldn't be a mitzvah to say, there's a mitzvah to believe that God mentioned Shabbos in the Torah. I may not believe in Shabbos, I may not believe in the Torah, but I can't deny that in the Torah it says Shabbos. There's no Bechira on that. That's a fact. So if there's a mitzvah to believe that Tchias HaMesim is in the Torah, then there has to be another possibility. It can't be there that there's no way of avoiding that. So there has to be another way of learning that pasuk that doesn't imply Tchias HaMesim. You have your choice now. You can learn it and use it as a source and believe that that's the source of Tchias HaMesim in the Torah. Or if you choose, you can deny that and learn a different pshat in that pasuk. But there always has to be another way. And that's what it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hardened Paro's heart. He always brought the Makos in a way that they weren't definitely, the implication wasn't definite proof that it's coming from God. There was always another way for Paro to explain it. And that's called hardening his heart, giving him another option to preserve his free choice. So those are basically the three possibilities. It says that the Tzfardim, and there's an argument in the Rishonim, what exactly the Tzfardim were. Many Rishonim learned they were frogs. And that's what everybody knows, the frogs, all the songs or whatever, the croaking frogs. But both the Ibn Ezra and the Abarbanel accepts the Ibn Ezra's pshat, and he brings proof to it. They learned that Tzfardim were crocodiles, alligators. And that's why they were something that caused death. Usually frogs don't cause any death. And even though it says that they went inside them or whatever, maybe choked them or whatever, but normally that's not what frogs do. Frogs are not deadly animals, but crocodiles are. And the Abarbanel shows how the description of these Tzfardim really applied to crocodiles, and it was a miracle that they were Bechlal in the Nile. Usually crocodiles were not in the Nile. They were in other places. They came to the Nile, and the miracle was that they didn't leave the Nile. Rak by Yor Tisha'ar, it was a miracle that there are still crocodiles today in the Nile, because normally crocodiles don't live in that kind of water. They don't live in fresh water. They live in seas, in salt water. In any case, whatever. So that's the machlokis. So, but it says whatever these were, whether they were frogs or crocodiles, some of them were moser nefesh, and they went into the ovens. And the Gemara says that when were the ovens being used? To bake, when they were heated up. That means they went and they got immolated in the ovens to do Ratzon Hashem. These crocodiles or frogs, some of them, right, their job, their mission was to invade the ovens while they were hot, and meaning that they went and they died, Al Kiddush Hashem. They died doing God's will. The Gemara says that Maro Hananya Mishov Azaria. Hananya Mishov Azaria, right, were willing to be thrown into Nebuchadnezzar's fiery oven rather than bow down to his pestle. So the Gemara asks, Maro Hananya Mishov Azaria, what did Hananya Mishov Azaria see that enabled them to go into the oven, right, and die Al Kiddush Hashem? So the Gemara says they made a kal v'chomer from the Tzfardim. The Tzfardim that don't get rewarded or punished, they fulfilled God's will and went into the ovens, some of them, right? And those are the ones, Taka, that survived, that did God's will even to go into the oven. So we who get rewarded and punished surely have to do that. So the obvious question is, what do they need to see the Tzfardim? It's a halacha that you don't serve Avodah Zarah and Yoharik Val Yavar and you have to be killed. What did the Tzfardim add to them? What did it add to them? So I want to say the following. There's a Medrash that says that when the Rabban Shem created the world, he created it with a beis, Bereishis. And the Aleph complained that it's not fair. I was skipped over. Why don't you create the world with an Aleph? You could have said Elohim bara Bereishis instead of Bereishis bara Elohim. Start with an Aleph. So God said, I can't create the world with an Aleph because Aleph stands for Arur, curse. And Beis stands for Baruch. So I'd rather create the world with a Beis, with Baruch, not with an Aleph. But don't worry, I'll make it up to you, God said to the Aleph. When I give the Torah, you'll be the first letter, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. I'll start with an Aleph. So the obvious question is, if you can't start the creation of the world with an Aleph because it stands for curse, how can you start the Torah, the giving of the Torah, with an Aleph? Does it stand for curse also? So basically, what I want to say is that there are, the Rambam says that there are two ways of reaching Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. How do you recognize God? That you should love Him and fear Him. In Mishneh Torah, the Rambam says, by contemplating nature. When you contemplate nature, you see the tremendous wisdom of God in creation and nature and all of the creatures. You feel a tremendous love for this creator, and a tremendous awe of how small and insignificant you are compared to the wisdom of the creation. And that brings you to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. The Rambam in Mishneh Torah says the way to come to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem is through learning Torah. And there's no real contradiction between them. You really need both ways. The Torah guides you to see God in creation, and then when you are guided by the Torah, you see God in creation. Because if you don't have the Torah guiding you, then you may not see God in creation. Then if you contemplate nature or whatever, you may come to deny God. There are plenty of scientists and people who contemplate nature that use it in a totally distorted way and exclude God from creation, exclude God from nature altogether. So that's why the Rambam says you'll come to believe in God from contemplating nature. And the Torah says if you look at the sun, the moon, the stars, you'll come to serve idolatry. You'll deny God. The answer is, it depends what you're looking for. You can be looking for the Ribbono Shel Olam, that by studying nature and science, you will come to believe in God. And if you're not looking for that, you can come to deny God from studying nature. Right? The Yuri Gagarin, who was the first cosmonaut in outer space, the first Russian, first human being who left the gravitational pull of the Earth and went into space, right? When he came back to Earth, he said, I know for sure there's no God now. I didn't see him up there. So, I don't know, he expected to see some old man on a throne floating, but he only went, like, you know, out of the gravitational pull of the Earth. He didn't get to the ceiling. So maybe God was a few feet above him. But that's what he got out of his space mission. And there was an Apollo mission in the 1970s, and they beamed back television pictures of the Earth as it appeared from space. And they beamed it to all the whole world by a satellite. And before they beamed back those pictures, they read Tehillim Yutes HaShomayim Mesaprim Kvod Keil. The heavens declare the glory of Hashem. So here are Goyim, who from their mission in space came to a recognition of God. And here's a Goy who came to a denial of God. So you always need the Torah to guide you how to look at the world properly. That's the Aleph. The Aleph is Torah. The Beis, you have to be shown the Bracha and not be given a chance to see the Klala, because if you just study nature by itself, you need guidance to see that it's blessed. You have to need guidance to see the Ribbono Shel Olam in nature. And then you can come to really be impressed. But if you don't have that guidance, if you start with the Aleph, which could mean a curse, you'll see curse in nature, not blessing. But the Torah has its own guidance system. If you learn Torah, it'll guide you to the right conclusion. So Torah is always the Aleph, and the creation is always the Beis. And you always need those two ways of coming to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of coming to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. And that's why the brachos that precede Shema is Avas Hashem, V'yohavtes Hashem. The first bracha, it speaks about nature, Yotzer Ora V'orichoshech. And the second bracha, Ava Rabba, speaks about Torah. Those are the two paths to come to Avas Hashem. Ava Rabba starts with Aleph, and the bracha of Yotzer Or starts with a Beis, Baruch Ato Hashem. So the nature is always the Beis, and Torah is always the Aleph. There's a custom to say Borchi Nafshi in the winter, and to learn Pirkei Avos in the summer, Shabbos afternoon, after Mincha. Why? Shabbos Mincha is the time of Avas Hashem. Shabbos is the time of love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Shabbos Mincha is the peak of Shabbos. So you want to come to love Hashem. And we said you always need two ways the Torah to guide you, and then to see it in reality, in nature, which makes more of an impression on you. But you always need the Torah first. So in the summer, nature is in full bloom. So that path to Hashem is there in front of you. But the nights are very short, so Torah, which is mainly learned at night, is not so obvious. So we learn Pirkei Avos to supplement the derech of Torah. In the winter is the opposite. The nights are long, so Torah is very strong, but nature is hibernating in the winter. So you need to speak about nature and supplement that. So we say Borchi Nafshi. We speak about nature. Borchi Nafshi speaks about nature. And Borchi Nafshi, which speaks about nature, starts with a beis, and Avos, Pirkei Avos, starts with an aleph. So that's what it says. Hanani Mishol Vazaria knew the halacha, that you have to be Moser Nefesh for Kiddush Hashem. But if they didn't see it in nature, they didn't see that in nature the frogs, the crocodiles did the same thing, it wouldn't have made that much of an impression. So even though you know from the Torah about the Rabban Hashem, you recognize him from the Torah, is another added incentive to feel it when you see it actually in nature itself. So those are the two drachim to come to Avas Hashem: Torah, which guides you, and then nature, which impresses you because you see it with your five senses, makes more of an impression on you.